Welcome to Roundtable Talk, a podcast about longevity, senior services marketing, and the quality of life as one ages. Roundtable Talk is brought to you by Pavone Group and Varsity, a senior services agency focused on helping clients win the mature market. If you like the fresh perspectives we deliver in each episode, please give Roundtable Talk a 5-star review on the podcast service of your choice. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Varsity's Roundtable Talk. Today's guest is Steve Moran, founder and publisher of Senior Living Foresight, one of the most widely read and talked about media platforms in the senior housing industry. For more than a decade, Steve has been at the center of the conversation around senior living, tackling everything from occupancy and workforce challenges to leadership culture, innovation, and what the industry must do to meet the expectations of the next generation of older adults. And you know, I have to admit, it's one of the first emails I check out every morning. So, Steve, welcome to Roundtable Talk.
I'm excited about being here. I eat, breathe, and sleep senior living. And so having a chance to have a conversation about where the industry's at, where we're going, what's working and what's not is one of my favorite things to do.
That's great. And I know I always learn something. I always enjoy seeing you at the conferences, but it's great to see you here virtually. So you read and publish industry commentary every day. What's the real story in senior living right now that people aren't talking about enough?
So, as you know, we have great occupancy. We've had the best occupancy that we have ever had in my lifetime. And that's really, really good news. What's interesting to me, there are two things that are really interesting to me. The first is that when I talk to operators and leaders, there seems to be a sense of apprehension or fear, like, this is really good, but it feels like disaster is just around the corner.
Interesting.
Probably some of that's from COVID hangover, but that's just kind of a sense I have. And the other thing is that we have operators who are just crushing at huge margins, huge occupancies, and there are still some people out there that are really, really struggling. I toured a building just a couple days ago here in my local market that was just taken over by a local operator. She bought it, and the building was struggling and struggling and struggling. So it's all about the operator and how they run their business, because it can be super successful or really, really tough. The other thing that I'm concerned about is that we have more and more of the buildings are owned by big investor groups who are primarily focused on the returns. Their goal is to create maximum returns for their investors, their owners, and so they are who they are. The problem with that is that they all they really care about is returns, and really short-term returns, because the typical idea is that we will buy a property, sell it, and in 6 or 7 years.
So, Steve, for years, senior living has talked about innovation and meeting the moment, but the moment keeps changing. Today's older adult is healthier, more connected, and more opinionated about how they want to age. Is senior living truly aligned with what today's older adult wants, or are we still building for yesterday's resident?
So, this is a fascinating question to me. I am kind of a contrarian here. So, first off, we talk about trying to appeal to people in their 70s. I'm 71. My wife is a little bit older than I am. And honestly, we're a long way away from moving into senior living. We live in a single-story house. We live on half an acre. I've got 10 chickens, 3 dogs, 3 cats, and hard to replicate that. There's this widespread belief that baby boomers, the current generation, are going to want something very different. I think there are a few things, but I think mostly as we get older, we're going to want the same things. On the other hand, I think the industry is more or less doing the same thing that they've already done. And so I'm not sure we're really aligned. Part of the biggest problem is that if we are honest about the industry, it's still the last resort. I choose senior living when I can no longer live at home. no longer is a broad term. It might be, I don't want to take care of my yard anymore. I don't want to go grocery shopping. I don't want to cook. It might mean that I have real ADL needs, but I'm not sure that, and again, we talk about the role of the investment community in this. They want to provide the least amount of service at the least amount of cost because that means the biggest margin. But does that really get us where we want to be? Does it really meet people's needs? I'm not sure about that. I think that I'm not ready to move into senior living. And most of my friends aren't ready.
Sure. Interesting. You know, and it's interesting that you were talking about dogs and cats and chickens. I'm hearing so many people who are keeping chickens either in an urban environment or suburban environment. And obviously we see people moving into communities with dogs and cats. But I wonder, I mean, obviously people won't be moving in with chickens, but if that will ever become a part of the culture, because more and more people are enjoying, you know, the fresh eggs and just the tending and caring.
It's an interesting question, and it creates all sorts of interesting problems. So my stepfather lives in a senior living community, and we've got more eggs than we can eat. We have 9 hens, and I've got probably 3 dozen eggs sitting on the counter. Occasionally, I'll take eggs over to the community, but they can't feed them to the residents. The staff can take them home. And so maybe the rules are a little rigid, and it makes it really hard from creating optimal situations for older people.
Certainly. Pardon me. No, that makes good sense. So what are operators doing well right now that deserves more credit than what they're getting? And what are they getting wrong?
So I think they're doing, for the most part, I think they're getting dining pretty right. I think that they're aware that dining is the one place they touch residents' lives typically 3 times a day. And I think they're doing transportation right. I think that in terms of when they build buildings, they're creating better spaces for people who are living in the communities. I think that they are still not giving residents enough control over their own lives. I received an email from a woman who lives in a community just a few days ago. And she was sort of a complaint list of about her life and her community. The one that really struck me was that they have a public TV behind the bar, and the residents were engaged in a massive battle with leadership over who got to pick the channels that were being played on the TV.
Interesting.
And she said she was so happy they'd won this great victory because they now have the ability to pick the channel 4 days a week. And I'm thinking, this shouldn't even be a question. It shouldn't even be a battle. Those are the kinds of things that I think we are still getting wrong.
Sure. So it wasn't a battle between this group of residents that wanted this programming and that group that wanted that programming. It was just, what is the community automatically putting up versus can we choose?
Exactly right.
Interesting.
Exactly right.
Yeah. So if you had to describe the senior living industry today in one word, what would it be and why?
Oh, I think it's, you sent me this question in advance and I've spent quite a bit of time thinking about it. And the word that pops in my head, it doesn't feel quite right, but it seems, the word I would add put to it is the word tentative. That we've kind of got something that works pretty well, the returns are pretty good, and there's a lot of hesitancy to change anything because it's sort of working.
Now, would you attribute that to both the for-profit side as well as the not-for-profit side?
Yeah, I would, yeah.
Okay, interesting. So this is a question that every Roundtable Talk guest gets. What are you looking forward to as you age, Steve?
So I'm sort of already in that age category, right? I'm 71.
But you still have a few good decades left, hopefully.
I do. I guess the first thing is that, you know, I'm financially comfortable at this point, which means that I've got more freedom to do and say what I want to do. I'm looking forward to hanging out with my grandkids, playing with my chickens. I am trying to become a golfer. And so I'm working for that. But so those are sort of all recreational things. But my crack, if you will, is making the world a better place for people. And so I'm spending a lot of time. I'm looking at that and I'm saying, you know, I've got another maybe 10 to 15, maybe if I'm really lucky, 20 years where I can really be effective in doing that. And so what are the things that I want to focus on? I'm deeply involved with my church. I teach fifth and sixth grade kids every weekend, and I'm good at it. I like that, want to continue to make those kinds of impact. And so trying to figure out, you know, how do I make the most impact in the world?
I love that. That's great. So everyone says boomers will change everything. In what ways do you think that that's true?
So mostly, again, as I talked about earlier, I think that this is largely a myth. And I'll give you a sort of a good practical example. Now that I'm over 70, I'm spending more time going to the doctor, more time thinking about health conditions. And I laugh because when I'm hanging out with other people who are my age, we sit around talking about our doctor's appointments and our health conditions, all those same things that we once watched our parents and grandparents do. I think that as we get older, our needs and our desires are actually not going to be that much different. I think there are two big factors that do come into play, though. The first is that I want to have more control over my life. So coming back to the television story, you as a senior, the senior living communities are largely used to dictating how residents' lives run. And I think residents are going to, and their families are going to say, no, that's not how I want to do it. I want to make those decisions. I don't want you making those decisions. I'm paying you a lot of money. I want freedom to make those decisions. We collectively as a group of residents are going to make those decisions, not you. The other thing that boomers are really struggling with, I think, is just this idea of being older. I'm not all that thrilled about it. I know this will sort of make the anti-ageism people mad, but the truth of the matter is you get older, there are things you can't do anymore, or you can't do them as well, or you can't do them as fast. And so I think that a lot of us are kind of in denial about getting older.
Sure, sure. Now I'm curious, you mentioned that, you know, some of the communities aren't, necessarily adept at having the residents, you know, lead things and make decisions and such. Are you seeing some communities that are doing it really well? You don't have to name names, but what does that look like?
Yeah, so two weeks ago, I toured a senior living community that will open in about 6 months. It's a CCRC. It's called Wisteria in the San Fernando Valley. Mm-hmm. And yesterday I spent about half an hour, 45 minutes talking to their life enrichment director for the independent living. And what I love about what they're doing and how she approaches it is the building is very expensive to move into. People who are moving in are people who had very successful lives, their, you know, successful careers. And so she sees herself as primarily a resource person to take their ideas for how they want to live their lives and turn those into reality. But they're going to be the ones who are setting the agenda, who are deciding what life is going to look like. And as we talk, there's sort of three areas that they work on that I think of it, the first of it is sort of give back charitable kinds of things. And it could be money or it could be activity. The second thing is going to be fun stuff, right? Bowling, golfing, traveling, lectures, those kinds of things. And then the third is going to be creative pursuits, you know, painting, writing, sculpting, those kinds of things. And so helping people find the right mix and find their full potential is when senior living really wins.
And I love that.
So, I'm not sure we're actually there, but let me try this and you can do what you want to do with it. One of the biggest challenges I think we face as an industry is that we change people's lives. We change residents' lives, we change team members' lives, and we change families' lives. And we are really, really bad about actually telling those stories in ways that are compelling. I used to believe that we needed to go out and interview residents, have them tell their stories about living in community, how it changed their lives. I've tried doing some of those. There are a couple of people, Jack York has done a lot of work recording stories of residents. Nathan Jones has also done a lot of work recording residents. And I love so much what they're doing. But one of the things I've come to realize is that when you're trying to tell stories to move people's heart, to get them to see senior living in a new light, residents just aren't very good at storytelling. Most people are not very good storytellers. And so somehow we've got to be capturing these stories and then having professional storytellers actually tell those stories. So like Jack York is probably, in my view, is probably the best storyteller in the entire industry right now. And so I just have this vision of somebody like Jack as a brand spokesperson who goes out and captures these stories that are not told very well, but are amazing stories, and telling those in a way where people go, oh man, that would be amazing for me. That would be amazing for my mom. That would, my dad's life would be transformed if he were in a place like that.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So what do boomers care about that operators still underestimate?
I think that they care about, they want to not get old is the first thing. And so how do you, and so I think that really the question is how do we, on one hand, acknowledge that people are getting older and capabilities are decreasing, and yet at the same time, how do we create amazing life experiences? And I think that there are a lot of people who are thinking about that, who are exploring it. I'm not sure anybody has really gotten it all right, but I think we're moving in the right direction. And I think it's a huge, huge opportunity. And then this comes back to this autonomy, being able to make my own decisions.
That's great. So you've written a lot about staffing. Let's shift to that for a moment. Is the workforce crisis a temporary post-pandemic disruption? Or are we looking at something more long-term that requires a completely different approach to recruiting, retention, and culture? I mean, we've all seen the statistics with the ballooning, boomer population and then the decreasing generations that follow that. But what are your thoughts on that?
So I don't think we have a real staffing crisis. That's my number one. And I'm actually working on an article about myths we believe that aren't true. This is, I think, the biggest single one. As long as there are people who are willing to work at McDonald's and Taco Bell and Starbucks, we don't have a staffing crisis. We've got a culture crisis. And there are a few people who have figured this out. If you look at Goodwin House, they have something like 900 job applications that come in every single month. They hire 10 or 20 to do replacement of people who are leaving for various reasons. And the rest of them that go back out, they get the very best, and the rest of them go out to other places. So when we create a great work environment, a place where people feel valued, where they love coming to work every day, where they're feeling like they're making a huge difference, they'll tell their friends about it. We will have zero staffing shortages. I think the staffing shortage is a myth. I think it's a culture problem.
Sure. That's a really interesting perspective. And I think it kind of turns the whole question on its ear, which is really smart. And, you know, I couldn't agree more. Goodwin Living, Goodwin House, they do a phenomenal job. But what role does leadership culture play in retention?
Oh, I think leadership is everything. Two very quick stories, not directly senior living related. I, in my late 40s, decided I wanted to become a volunteer ski patroller. And I was living in Southern California. I signed up to be a volunteer. I went through not quite paramedic training, but sort of EMT 2 training. And then I got up on the mountain and I learned how to help people on the mountain and how to run toboggans down with human beings in it and keep them safe and all that.
Interesting.
And in doing that, we were so customer service focused. You know, we knew that people who were up on ski slopes, it was hard and they did stupid things and we had a lot of grace. When I moved to Northern California, I went to a different mountain And they just had a completely different attitude. So one day at the end of the day, when I was with the ski lifts had shut down and we were doing this thing called sweep where we make sure everybody's off the mountain before we come in, I was on the easiest slope doing that. And I came across this family and they were just having the best time, but they were terrible skiers. And they ski 10 feet, they'd fall over, they take 10 minutes getting back up, and they were laughing, and I was just tired, and I wanted to get on the road and get home, and I was frustrated, and I started yelling at them. And I got 30 seconds into my rant, and I stopped, and I thought, wait a minute, that's not who I am. But the culture on that mountain made it okay to yell at people. And so that's what I did. And so we create these cultures where things either become acceptable or not acceptable. So leadership is everything. You create a culture where people love coming to work, where they see that they're mission oriented, where they see they're changing people's lives. And leadership is everything.
Thank you for sharing that very personal story. That's a great example of that. So we've talked about staffing shortages and culture. But recruitment itself often still follows the same playbook: post the job, fill the shift, move on. How should executive teams be thinking differently about recruitment?
So they need to be telling, again, you know, it's sort of like this reoccurring theme for me, right? It's like, I want you to come to work for my organization because when you do, every day when you go home, you'll be able to tell your kids and your significant other stories about how you changed the lives of other people. And yep, you'll go home tired. You'll go home sometimes in tears because something, a resident has passed away or they've suffered. But you'll go home and tell stories about how you changed their lives. And you can never do that slinging coffee at Starbucks or handing out burritos at Taco Bell or making milkshakes at McDonald's. But when you come here, you will change people's lives and it will change you. And not only will you make lives, you will be loved and appreciated for everything you do. And then let me actually tell you some stories about some people who are actually already working here who have experienced this. And then you go on and you tell those stories. And why would you not want to work in a place like that?
I love that. Yeah, I've talked to a number of frontline team members who have left to Taco Bell, McDonald's, et cetera, for a dollar or two more an hour, and then have come back in 6 months to a year because it wasn't fulfilling and they weren't getting, you know, it wasn't feeding their soul. So great points. So choosing a senior living community is emotional and often overwhelming for families. We were talking about that a little bit earlier. What do the most effective sales teams do really well when talking to families from your perspective?
I think that they do two things that are very unusual. I think the first is that they are realistic about what they can and can't do, and they are realistic about how hard it is. I'm a senior living consumer. My stepfather has been in three senior living communities in the last 24 months. He's in a place that I'm pretty happy with right now.
Why three different ones? What led him to move from the first to the second to the third?
So the very first one was a big box senior living community. And he was coming out of the hospital. He was COVID positive. I wasn't crazy about moving him into that community, but they would take him when he was testing positive for COVID. And so we got down to the point where I just had no choice.
Sure.
And he was there for 60 days. It was not good. I wouldn't say it was horrible. The worst thing that happened is that I discovered he initially spent 2 weeks in memory care, then moved to assisted living. I discovered 3 weeks after he had moved into assisted living that he had not had a single shower. And, you know, residents can refuse showers. But as a family member, because he's got dementia, if he's refusing showers, I want to know about it. I want to get involved in that. And that was probably the icing on the cake that in retrospect, I actually wish I'd filed a complaint with licensing. I didn't. And so we actually brought him back home. We had him home for another 6 or 8 months. we just got to the point where we couldn't care for him safely and adequately. And so I moved him into a small 6-bed community. Again, it was availability. The one I wanted had no availability. After really 3 weeks, we just got rid of it. They were doing the basic and sitting him in front of a TV all day. And the place we really wanted to go had an opening. And so we made that move. Much better, but he needs a little bit more socialization. We're still working with them. We're hoping we can make that work, but I've got another option I'm also looking at. And so I know it's really, really hard, and it's really, really confusing, and it's not the same for every resident. And how do you, I mean, I'm an expert and I am really struggling with all of this. And so you're a family member. How do you know? And I think it starts by being realistic. I think you need to talk about why it works and the things that are going to be hard for families and residents when they move in. I think you've got to be realistic about the dangers of continuing to live at home. And I think people are afraid to do that. So they try to paint this picture of all these beautiful buildings and fantastic meals and adequate care. And the other part is we've got to set proper expectations. You only talk about how you're going to have a 4-star meal every meal, and it just can't happen no matter how expensive the community. The best sales guy I know says, look, some days you're going to have a meal that you, it's going to be like at home. Someday where mom sometimes fixes your favorite meal. Sometimes she serves you liver and onion. It's not as bad as liver and onion because you always got some choices that you can pick. But it's not always going to be just exactly what you want. And I think that would actually set a stage for a better experience.
Well said. Great point. So trust is foundational in senior living. Is transparency improving? Or do we still have real trust gaps to close?
So I think that it's improving. But I think that we still have trust gaps. When I go out and like look at, just as a very basic starting point, when I go out and look at senior living community websites, I would say no more than half of them post their prices. And I've heard all the logic about not posting prices. I think it's ridiculous. I'll go look for other things. And if I don't find pricing, I just move on to the next company. Most people do. So pricing is really basic. And then I think we've got to be willing to talk about what we can do and what we can't do, and what life enrichment looks like and what it doesn't look like. And we don't talk enough about the things that consistently make families and residents unhappy. And they're just realities. And we should be saying, you know, when you move in, this is all the good stuff. But here are going to be some things that people find challenging. And here's why that's okay, because it's just different. I mean, I can't take my chicken and my 10 chickens and 3 dogs, right?
There you go. Yep. So, interesting. Now, so I'm curious about the pricing. We debate that a lot with our clients. A lot of folks do not want to put it on the website, as you're saying. And I certainly can understand that some of the complexities of the different contract types, it can be confusing. And particularly if people are trying to compare a rental that might only have 1 or 2 levels of living with a full, you know, entrance fee continuum. But we always encourage at least a starting at price so that people have some sort of a context. How do you feel about that, starting at versus the entire rate sheet?
Oh, I think starting at is the right place to be. I think it's really hard to explain all the charges. Although, if your starting rate is is $5,000 and your average rate is $8,000 and your top is $11,000, you probably need to give a little bit more context, because you don't want somebody coming in and saying, "Oh, I can afford $5,000." And only to discover that nobody ever really pays $5,000. Sure. Nope. So you've got to use some common sense on that. But I think, to not post pricing is a huge, huge mistake. And it's actually something that somebody should study in terms of who wins more business.
Yep. And I do think it's an important thing to consider, because we don't know who didn't even raise their hand to talk to us if they didn't find the pricing somewhere. So that is important. So are there any industries outside of senior living that operators should be studying for marketing innovation?
Sure. I think we should be looking at things like Red Bull. I think that Red Bull, you know, of course, their advertising really has nothing to do with the energy drink at all. They've got these fantastic athletes who do these amazing things, and it makes everybody pay attention. We need big, bold stories that should be told. And the other thing is that Red Bull never really says, but then what they really do is that every other energy drink is boring, not Red Bull. And so you and I were to sit down and I were to ask you, there are probably over 1,000 energy drink brands, and you could name Red. If I just ask you to name energy drinks, you'd name Red Bull, and you might name, I don't know, Liquid Death or something, but that would be about it, right?
But Red Bull would definitely be at the top of everybody's list.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how do we get to the point where we are telling stories and we are talking about experiences in ways that when some people say, you know, when the time comes for senior living, that's the place where I want to go live because I'm going to have an amazing life.
That's a great point. And I mean, you're exactly right that people, we have to plant those seeds before people have decided that they want it, because, you know, it's just like buying a car where people are going to have that consideration set and, you know, seeds will be planted for two or three different car brands, two or three different communities. Sure, some people have the spreadsheet and visit everything, but we want to be there and top of mind, or at least close to the top of mind when they're making that decision to start shopping. So that's really smart.
Yeah.
But I love the Red Bull example. Sorry to cut you off, but.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, the other thing I think just more broadly is we need to create an experience that creates brand evangelists. Big fan of what Guy Kawasaki did. He created brand evangelists for the Macintosh computer. He's a brand evangelist for Canva now. And in a very little way, the current place, All Seasons, that where the six bed that my stepfather is in, I talk about that organization to people all the time because they do an amazing job. And so that's what we need, is we need people to say, man, I got my mom in this place, and it has transformed her life.
That's interesting because, you know, we'll often talk about net promoter scores and that sort of thing, but really leaning into the whole brand evangelism, I think that's a great point, Steve. So senior living has traditionally followed a fairly established model. Do you see new business models emerging that could disrupt traditional communities?
So I think there are two things that I find really interesting. I think that there is, so first off, a lot more ways to stay home alone. You've got Uber, some cities you've even got self-driving cars where you don't have to interact. You can get meals delivered, you can get services delivered, you can get home care. And so it makes it easier to stay home. And so one of the things that I think is a great opportunity is for senior living community organizations to say, we're not really a senior living organization. We are a older person's lifestyle experience company. And we are here to create a great experience for you, no matter where you want to live. And I think that is a really, really big opportunity. I think that we are going to see, you know, we've got a cost problem. It's going to get worse because of the staffing issue. And we complain about staffing getting more expensive. And I think that on one hand, that's true. I just think it means we're getting to the point where we're being forced to pay more reasonable wages for frontline workers. But it pushes, it makes it less affordable, which means there are going to be more people who can't afford it. And so I think that the model of having independent living, Hawthorne, of course, and Holiday have done this for a long time. But independent living, where I bring in just the services I need when I need them, is a great way to keep costs down. And I still kind of think that nobody's really figured it out, but how do you get into a Golden Girls model where it becomes, you know, sort of a house sharing. And, you know, it's right now senior living is the working staff, the community does all the work and the residents don't do any work. Is there a way we could actually let residents do the things that they could do maybe a few hours a day that would actually reduce costs? So I think that's the opportunity. And I think that we need to really talk about the difference between living at home, because even if you have enough money, and with my stepfather, we've had a few cases where we've gone on vacation, or one time we were out of town and we brought in home care agencies to be with him. And they've been really wonderful people. They found things to do, you know, housekeeping kinds of things, because he didn't need a lot of attention. But huge language barrier, huge educational differential. And so they had a hard time of really creating great conversations, a great living experience. And we need to be talking about that, the risk of being at home with home care, no matter how much money you have.
Sure. No, that's a great point. Now, I have seen some communities that are, you know, leaning into finding ways for the residents to contribute, whether it be landscaping, gardening, you know, meal delivery within the community, some ways that people can volunteer in areas that they love and they feel passionate about, that do ultimately, you know, enhance the experience, but reduce some of the overhead costs. So I do think that's a really good point. And I think it's something that not enough communities do. But then I guess, of course, it's always a matter of, you might have one group that loves gardening, for example, and landscaping. And then if they move to a point where they aren't able to do it, nobody comes up behind, but then you have to just cross that bridge and you come to it and perhaps contract some of that out. But so, fast forward 10 years, what does a successful senior living organization look like?
I think that the successful senior living organization, I don't know exactly what it looks like, but I think they operate under two principles. And the first is that the most valuable asset they have are their people, and the people working there, the people who are working there, and that those people are loved and cherished and empowered to make decisions, to talk about how to make their work environment, the lives of the residents, better. I think that along those same lines, that residents and their families are seriously listened to and really end up driving exactly what the program is. Now, that's a little bit dangerous, because as a family member, I don't have necessarily a big enough scope to see what's possible. So you've got to be careful that they're not just picking bingo because bingo is all they know, when in fact, you could be doing book clubs and movie clubs, and you could be traveling, taking a cruise together, and the families might not think about that. So it's got to be done as a partnership. I think that oftentimes families are happier about senior living than they should be, because they just don't realize that it could be better than it is. And so I think that we've got to think about that and say, what creates an amazing experience? There's this exhibition baseball team called the Savannah Bananas. Jesse Cole, he wears these bright yellow sort of tuxedo things. And one of the things he talks about is that they're completely committed to this idea of being fan first. So what is it that's going to give the fans the very best experience every moment, even when they're standing in line waiting to get into the stadium before the game starts? What gives them a great experience while they're waiting for the game to happen? What gives them a great experience when the game starts? And what gives them a great experience when they're exiting? And what would it be like if senior living said, every moment of the day, we're going to say, what's a great experience for residents, for team members? And the last thing that I've really discovered is that we do not spend nearly enough time thinking about the needs of family members. And this is true with even the very best of senior living organizations. Family members are just an afterthought. Everything is focused on the resident. I get it. It's logical, except that it's not logical at all. My stepfather's got dementia. When something terrible happens, if I'm involved in it, maybe I even caused it in some way, or I have a bad interaction with him, because I remind him that his parents, in fact, are actually died 20 years ago and I shouldn't have, and he melts down. Tomorrow morning when he wakes up, he will have no memory of that. I'll live with the guilt of that for weeks. And we just don't think about the family members. We have got to spend more time looking at, because that's how we'll create great fans in the industry.
Sure, sure. You know, I know, you know, when you're moving up the continuum, assisted memory skilled, certainly it proportionally shifts to be the adult child or the family member who's making the decision or who is heavily influencing the decision. But when it, pardon me, when it's an independent living, it's generally the resident, him or herself, who are making those decisions. But, you know, as I was listening to you, I was thinking there are even opportunities there where you can create those, you know, brand evangelists and such at that level. Even if they haven't been involved in the decision-making, they can still have that positive experience, you know, from how the brand or the organization has delivered for their parents, but also for them and their experiences that they have when they're on campus.
Yeah, no question about that.
That's a great point. So how about technology? You know, robotics, AI, there are lots of different ways that technology is going to play a role. Talk a little about that.
So I love technology. I'm a huge user of AI. I use it for brainstorming. I use it for simple things like grammar and spelling correction. I use it for research. I find that I can ask AI to do research on topics or ideas that I just couldn't have done because it would have taken $20,000 to a McKinsey and weeks, and I couldn't reiterate. And in 10 or 20 minutes or a couple hours, I can find really, really great information. The problem with technology is it's really hard to figure out what really works and what works in your organization. It tends to still take too much time and energy and effort. It tends to take too many dollars. It's really, really fragmented. I mean, you look at like sensor technology right now, there must be 30 or 40 companies out there that are doing, you know, wander stuff and fall technology and looking at movement and those kinds of things. So how do you figure out the right one is really, really hard. It's just messy. But I think it's coming together. I think that AI is starting to make a real difference. I think we still need to figure out how to do better data lakes so we can actually, my dream is that I can take all this data, dump it into a huge data lake and just go into my AI interface and say, okay, you got all this data. What should I be concerned about? What should I know about? What should I be thinking about? Where are the opportunities? And it'll go out and figure out that stuff that I can never in a million years see. I'm surprised that we don't see wider adoption of robots for things like, primarily for things like cleaning and running errands and those kinds of things. But they're non-trivial kinds of things to deal with, and so it's an exciting time. I think technology will continue to evolve, and probably 10 years from now we'll see a grand consolidation, and there'll be two or three big technology companies that kind of do everything, and it'll be, I don't even know if it'll be the best technology, but it'll be easier to use and understand and manage.
Great point. So you've had some big news in the recent past. Now that Senior Living Foresight is part of ProCare, how do you see the platform evolving? And what's next for Senior Living Foresight?
Yeah, so it's a great question. The decision to sell was driven primarily by the reality that I'm getting older. ProCare had approached me a year and a half before the sale to see if I was interested in selling. It was like, I'm flattered that you asked, not really interested. Once I turned 70, I really started taking stock of my life. And it's like, I can't do this forever. I probably don't want to do this forever, at least not at the same level of intensity. And so I went back to ProCare and said, hey, okay, I'm ready to have this conversation. And so we spent several months talking about what it would look like, what the potential downsides are, how the benefits of it. And before we made the sale, how do we continue the legacy of what we built to make the industry better? And what really excited me was that they had this big commitment to make the industry better. And of course, what it does from them from a business standpoint is that it gives ProCare more visibility in the marketplace as they want to tell their story about how they're helping organizations make their whole HR functions work better and more efficiently. For me and for Foresight, it meant that they were going to take over all the stuff I didn't like to do, like payroll and payables and getting sponsorships and those kinds of things, and leave me free to do more thought leadership, to do more interviews, to do more public speaking. So they provide tremendous resources. They're putting a financial weight behind it. Right now, we're in the process of adding a number of additional content creators. Currently, Bill Pettit is working with us. We've got Jason Zuccari with Hamilton Insurance will be coming on. We've got a number of Direct Supply is doing content with us. And so I'll go over the next few months from doing about 85% of the content to maybe 20% of the content. And that will allow me to spend more time doing thinking, going deeper, figuring out how to really have a big impact on the industry. So I'm super, super excited. They have been so supportive. They have never once come to me and said, hey, that article you wrote that was a little edgy, we don't want you doing that. Complete freedom on the editorial side. Nothing has changed at all. They have absorbed our entire team. So I am, it's been nothing but good for me, nothing but good for my team, nothing but good for the industry.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, and I do love the fact that you do take some risks. You are not afraid to take a stand, which I really admire.
Yeah, I think it's an amazing industry. You know, I know there are people who are critics of what we do who feel like I'm too critical. I love the senior living industry. I think for so many older people, it makes their lives so much richer, so much better. I think that for family members who have been trying to provide care at home, like I was with my stepfather, it makes their lives just immeasurably better. It changes the world for the better. But just because all that's true doesn't mean we can't and shouldn't improve. We should be our worst critics, right? We should be saying, what is it that we're doing wrong? How do we get this right? How do we do it better? How do we make it so everybody in the nation is in love with senior living and says, I don't want to get old, but when I get old, that's where I want to go live because I'm going to have this amazing life.
Well said. So last question, what have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self?
Oh, that I love this question. I wish I'd known that I should have spent more time asking people for advice. I used to believe that when I didn't know something, that for me to go ask people to help me was a sign of weakness and I needed to either fake it or figure it out on my own. I don't think I ever walked into a college professor's office just to say, I just want to get to know you and learn from you and I don't have a specific question for you. And I realize now that college professors actually live for that. And it would have meant that I would have gotten better grades. I would have been smarter. I would have made less mistakes. More recently, I've started being more aggressive about looking for guests both in and outside the industry that felt like they were way above my pay grade. And I've been surprised, and I get a lot of no's, but I've been surprised at the number of yeses. Gary Ridge, who until recently was the CEO at WD-40, which has got one of the finest workplace cultures in the entire country, has been on a couple times. Guy Kawasaki, who runs a wonderful, wonderful podcast called Remarkable People, and was brand evangelist for Apple Macintosh. Came on. I've got some other big names I'm working on right now, and I just need to don't be afraid to go reach out to me. I have people reach out to me all the time. Sometimes I can't respond. Sometimes I get busy and I don't respond. And maybe the other part of that is that if somebody doesn't respond to you first, don't be afraid to be persistent and go back again. Just because they didn't respond doesn't mean they really want to say no. It just means they're busy. And well, that you just need to be persistent in a nice kind of way.
Yep. No, that's a great point. Well, Steve, thank you for saying yes to this discussion. It's been a real pleasure. I've always enjoyed our discussions, over the years, and look forward to seeing where this next chapter in your journey takes you.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's been great fun having this conversation. I look forward to seeing you at the next conference and doing it again.
Absolutely. Well, I'm Derek Dunham for Varsity's Roundtable Talk, and I'd also like to thank Dave Schaffner, our producer, and Matt Campbell, our engineer. See you next time.